And welcome back to Connections on this Innovation Friday. Evan Dawson here with Matthew Leonard, the editor of Innovation Trail. And we're looking at the interstate system. This is an issue that has been reported on pretty heavily by Innovation Trail and a lot of great resources online. Because I think a lot of us, certainly me, before I started going through what Innovation Trail had done, I did not quite realize the history of the interstate and where maybe we've fallen short, Matthew.
Right. Well, apparently, we kind of got started on this because there's been some one of the stories that we have covered has to do with the fate of the I-81 in Syracuse, but it's really relevant to the city of Rochester and to many other cities, as we'll hear from our guests today. Let's just recap a little bit with a nice little moment of archival film. This is a really classic little piece of nostalgia for everyone to kind of remind them about the birth of the freeway system.
In this century, America has become a nation on wheels. We ride on wheels to work, to shop, to play, to go about any place we want to go. We depend on wheels to bring us the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the things we use. But when we depend on wheels, we depend also on highways and roads and streets for the wheels to roll on. And therein lies the challenge, building highways and roads and streets fast enough to keep up with the need. After World War II, the nation began developing a case of acute congestion that cost us millions of dollars a year in time, equipment, and lives. By 1956, there were more than 65 million cars on our roads.
And getting misty-eyed and getting misty-eyed on the end of the phone is our guest, Professor Joe Demento. No, I'm only joking, Joe. Very nice to have you with us. Joe is at the School of Law, University of California, Irvine. He's the author of 11 books specializing in environmental law, international dispute resolution, and urban planning. But you've also, Joe, written a lot and thought a lot, really, about the interstate highway system.
Exactly, and thanks for the honor to be on your show. I love that clip, don't you?
Yeah.
Nostalgic.
It's fantastic. But it really captured a sense of this incredible aspirational, the sense of aspiration, obviously a sense of a shared national vision for this huge piece of infrastructure. Tell us, just take us back a little bit, if you can, to the thinking around, the sort of the rhetoric around, you know, that period that we just got a taste of.
Well, I'm not sure if your piece was from the World's Fair, but there are similar pieces from the World's Fair showing that the interstate was part of a new modernism, a new movement toward efficiency, an approach that could help us meet many different objectives in the United States. And the exhibition at the World's Fair was sponsored by General Motors, called Futurama, was the most attended exhibition at the fair. People were just mesmerized by these visions of how we could build the great modern city and move people seamlessly through it.
And then where has it fallen short, Joe?
Well, this is a huge topic. As you know, I spend maybe too much time on it. It's fallen short.
Impossible. That's impossible to spend too much time on.
It's fallen short in the sense that it, in many places, has not increased mobility. I am now living in L.A. for a bit, and the freeways are not free, either in terms of tolls, but also in movement. It's fallen short in the sense that the notion that it could revitalize the inner city, which was part of the rationale for Interstate 81 in Syracuse. In many places, it has not been successful in revitalizing. It's fallen short in that, and you can't blame the inner city freeway, but it was in parallel with other movements that led to further segregation of our society. So those are some of the ways it has fallen short.
Now we should. You've got some strong upstate connections as well, Joe, don't you?
Yes, very much.
Right, and I know you spoke. You were in Syracuse last, I believe, last year, talking about the issue of the I-81 there, which is coming to the end of its functional life in the downtown of Syracuse. And it's definitely, in the reporting that we've done, been a piece of infrastructure that's really created incredible divisions, emotional and sort of philosophical divisions in the city, in the discussion of what to do with this piece of roadway.
Yes, it's very sad. I spent a lot of time in Syracuse in the Finger Lakes area. I grew up there. I grew up on the north side. Then, when the early interstate decisions were being made, there was participation only by a very limited group of people. Now there's potential for great participation, but it is quite discouraging to see the factionalism that is evolving. I couldn't agree more. I think this is an opportunity for the county and the city and the neighborhoods to work together to create a new vision and an approach that will be healthy for the whole central New York region.
Well, as Matthew said, emotional issue in Syracuse. We've seen Rochesterians talk about their own inner loop and the division that can come. Just reading online, NPR and Innovation Trail reporting in Syracuse, there are people there. Syracuse's Common Council president calls it the city's Berlin Wall. That is a very strong term, but if you tear it down, what goes in its place, Joe? How do you fix it?
That's exactly right, and I am not blindly saying tear it down and people will come and the city will be gentrified and made more livable. These are the things that people should be talking about together, not in their separate clans. The county responded very quickly and said it has to stay. The business association in the suburbs has created a new Save 81, I think is the name of it. And I think people should be talking to each other. I know there have been open forums in the On Center and other places, but I think it's a situation that requires a lot of time and people listening to each other.
Just hold that thought, Joe. We're just going to cross to. We're joined by our Innovation Trail reporter Ryan Delaney, who's in Syracuse now. Ryan, you've been doing. You've been hearing what Professor Demento's been saying, and you've been covering this in real time for a couple of years now, as part of your beat there. Just give us a sense of how kind of. I mean, passions. There's been some pretty passionate exchanges going on, as I understand it, from your reporting and what you've been witnessing.
There is, and there's really been a shift, I think, in the last year. A round of studies came out last spring, kind of this first round of the feasibility of the different ideas that had been thrown out there. And at that point, it seemed like there was a lot of momentum for this idea to tear down the highway and to reroute it around the city. And that's when we started to hear a lot of opposition or a lot of concern about that. A lot of politicians and lawmakers kind of towing the middle ground said that we needed more discussion and, you know, wider range of ideas and options. And then we heard, as you mentioned, that Save 81 group, a lot of suburban and some downtown businesses worrying that this was going to drive business away, to literally divert customers away from them, from either suburban hotels or shopping centers. And then in the city in the last few months, when the State Department of Transportation started to go into some of the communities that literally live in the shadow of the highway to explain this process, there was a lot of fear among people that, you know, the same thing could happen that happened almost 50 years ago, that, you know, people are going to possibly lose their homes, they're going to be moved from whatever construction goes on. And then a lot of concern that they were going to be ignored, that, you know, the ideas out there haven't focused enough on public transportation or access and transportation needs of the disabled or the poor, the people who don't have cars. So it's been a very wide range of concerns and big question marks among a lot of people.
And Professor Demento, you mentioned this as well, this idea of somehow that it was supposed to increase, that mobility, I guess, was supposed to be equated with some sort of, some sort of notion of social equality. Is that kind of too much of a stretch around the sort of thinking about what the freeways were supposed to enable?
Well, I think it is a little bit of a stretch. The idea was that all will benefit from these, but the specific notion on equality and mobility was not a major concern. What was very much discussed was the improvement of, in our case in Syracuse, of the improvement of the downtown area, and this was very much linked with the movement toward redevelopment. So they came in parallel, they assisted each other, and the notion of redevelopment, of course, is to help people of lower incomes as well. That did not seem to play out very well in the Syracuse case.
And Professor, if I could jump in with a question on kind of the dichotomy of urban areas when it comes to roadways. I've seen very differing scenarios. I worked in Charleston, Huntington, West Virginia for several years. Charleston has an expressway right through the middle of the city. Huntington does not, and there's not a whole lot of development there. And I heard over and over that if they could do it over again, they'd get a highway through the middle of Huntington so more people would go there. Conversely, you hear people talking about things like Syracuse, sometimes Rochester, et cetera, as if that kind of development is an impediment. And in the Syracuse debate, and maybe Ryan can even weigh in on this, we've been hearing about sprawl, the concern that a lot of the development is going to the suburbs, and a way to eliminate sprawl and refocus the development is to get rid of I-81 or expressways. Which side of the argument makes more sense to you, Professor?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind above all is that there is no public interest when it comes to this, unfortunately. There are a number of individual interests that are competing, and I think the goal would be to get them to listen to each other. In the Charleston and Huntington cases, it would be interesting to look at who says it would be bring benefits. The people who are displaced, the people whose businesses are affected. I think these are very case-specific. I don't know the region you're talking about, but the regions that we're talking about in upstate New York, there are neighborhoods that were ignored historically and don't want to be ignored again. That does not mean that they are going to be in consensus about what should be done.
Just a note to our operator, John, just in case you worry, we're not going to that standby story. We're very happy to stay with this particular topic for the rest of the hour. Professor Demento, there are examples. I think you sent through some talking points while we're preparing to talk with you, and you mentioned some examples of places where they've actually successfully dealt with raising the freeway through the city. I mean, there are a couple of examples you could point to where you think either the process or the outcome was kind of a win.
Well, the classic cases that are used are Milwaukee. In the United States, and those places like the Embarcadero that was removed in San Francisco. There are many in the United States. There are others throughout the world. Seoul, Korea, I visited 20 years ago, and the main freeway was literally a parking lot. Now it's a beautiful urban walking space and area. Madrid is doing the same thing. So I think that there are examples of successes, but there are some challenging areas where it would be presumptuous to say that the raising of this 2 miles or 4 miles is going to be a panacea for the area.
Ryan Delaney in Syracuse. I mean, does this issue also become, I guess, a kind of a touchstone or a crucible for other kinds of discussions around what's going on in the city, other sorts of urban politics, political issues?
I think so, a bit. We've here in Syracuse experienced a bit of a downtown renaissance or revitalization, and that's something a lot of people here in the community have focused on. A lot of former office space or former department stores being renovated, a lot more people moving and living downtown. The urban core still has a ways to go in terms of being fully vibrant and occupied, but I think a lot of people, when looking at the success of downtown, see the highway as a catalyst, so to speak, of what the next step is going to be. I think there's a lot of people who say that tearing down the highway will only expand that downtown you know, as I think we've discussed already this hour, there was that idea 60 years ago that the highways were needed to bring people into downtown. Well, now a lot of people are moving and living downtown, so maybe there's not that need for the roadway to bring people in. If more people want to, again, live in urban cores, and there's less desire to live out in the suburbs.
Right. If I could just jump in for a second.
Sure.
I know your show is focused on innovation and improvement in upstate New York, and independent of what happens, it's quite remarkable, even though, as your other guest said, on a modest basis, to see the changes that have occurred downtown. And growth brings growth. And I grew up in Syracuse when we'd walk downtown, and there were a half dozen theaters, and there were beautiful shopping stores and so on. Then in the 70s and 80s, as my father used to say, you could shoot a cannon through down Salina Street. Now it's coming back, and in ways that I, 10 years ago, I would have thought, well, was naive to predict. It's quite exciting.
Just talk a little bit about, I guess, I just wonder whether the layers of government have played a role in how this has all kind of panned out. Obviously, federal roadway system, am I correct in thinking that, you know, obviously you have a federal roadway and then you also have, you know, local, regional, county, you know, city governments also managing their own streets, but then you have this kind of huge, you know, Leviathan system that runs through there. Has that been a factor in how the interstate system has kind of wound up, these sort of layers of governance and the kind of authorities that have actually managed them?
There's no question, and they've changed dramatically since Syracuse made its first decisions. The regulatory environment had really a sea change in who made the decisions, under what conditions. So when Syracuse made its early decisions, there was virtually no concern over environmental impact assessment, the federal and state law that is driving the decision in Syracuse at this point. Housing displacement, public participation. The highway agencies really dominated in the 50s in decision-making about where freeways would go, what they would look like. To the point that when the freeway design was actually presented to the mayor in Syracuse, he was surprised at what it looked like. And it was as if he was a player on the side as opposed to someone who was involved. Now, the potential for many interests being involved is significant. And unfortunately, if people in upstate don't come together on this, no matter who wins, it may be a short-term victory, because in many areas there's been years and decades of litigation over a particular choice as to an urban freeway.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, what do you think the echoes in Rochester are for this issue?
Yeah, well, this is a reason why this is an interesting story for people who aren't necessarily in Syracuse to follow, I think, because what you're saying, Professor Demento, as well, is that the kind of the processes of dialogue and consultation and the kind of time, you know, you gave us a very vivid idea of the way in which timing has played a factor in terms of the completion of these very, very large-scale projects, but they've perhaps been completed on a timeline that's kind of disconnected from what's really been going on in, say, urban centres, the kind of changes going on with the cities themselves. So, I mean, it's also to do with this bigger question about ageing infrastructure, and we know this was a kind of a platform in Governor Cuomo's budget proposal delivered earlier this week, which was that infrastructure is aging, they're coming to the end of their operational lives, a lot of key pieces of infrastructure like, you know, bridges, key pieces of roadway and so on. And it's a time when people are going to need to start to make some very, very serious decisions and planning decisions about what to do with this kind of infrastructure. Professor Demento, I mean, it's you mentioned, let's talk about the role of...
Oh, that's exactly right.
Sorry, that sounded like a statement. I was kind of forming it into a question, but I just wanted to ask about the role of engineers, because you mentioned that, you know, the kind of idea of these that I think you've said in some notes as well, is that engineers aren't the only people who are going to provide the solutions to these kinds of problems.
That's That's right. And the book that Professor Ellis and I wrote about this, the focus was on which professions are involved and which professions took the lead role. And in the 50s and 60s, it was the highway engineers. They were professional. They had professional organizations. They had a engineering science involving transportation science that knew how to get things done. And they were very effective. As what they developed was successful in certain places and less successful in others, other professions began to make larger contributions. The freeway down the street from here, the Century Freeway, which is one covered in our book, was slowed for 10 years because of reaction to an engineering solution that did not address the impacts on the local community housing and so on. So I think now we're in a situation where engineers play an important role, but it need not be the dominant role. I doubt even if they want it to be the dominant role that we decide what happens in Syracuse. So I think what it needs to happen is the community decides, and engineers are among the professionals that help us resolve how it is implemented.
All right, we got to leave the discussion here and thank our guests. And I want to say to Ryan Delaney, an Innovation Trail reporter in Syracuse, regardless of whether you're in Rochester, Syracuse, or even in New York State, no matter what state you're listening in, I think what Ryan is covering will have implications for all of us. Ryan, we look forward to future reports from you. Thanks for taking the time for us.
My pleasure, and thank you.
And Professor Joe Demento from the School of Law, University of California, Irvine. Thanks for spending about the half hour with us, Professor. Thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
And Changing Lanes is the name of your book, Professor, right? If people want to check out your writing, Changing Lanes.
Yes, that'd be great.